Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
You have just tuned in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. Yes, this is 3GT, and this is Barry York, along with my friends Scott Hunt and Kyle Borg. And guys, guess who I saw listening to 3GT even this day as we're recording this? My daughter. Well, okay. My daughter. Oh, I guess I should have let you guess.
Man, I was going to, you know,
you're
I had
too
a one
slow on the draw.
There's 7 billion people on planet Earth. I had a whole list of names coming to mind.
So my high school, she just graduated from high school, my youngest daughter, I was just walking through the living room and I heard Kyle's voice and I thought, oh.
Now that she is academically credentialed, she of course is tuning into Three Guys Theologizing because everybody with academic credentials appreciates us.
Yes. So it warmed this dad's heart to see my daughter listening to her old man and his buddies theology. I think it was our issue on prayer a few times ago. Well, that kind of leads us into today's topic at hand. We want to talk about fathers in the faith, about the importance of older people in the Lord, encouraging, mentoring, taking under the wing younger people in the Lord. And part of the reason for doing this is because of someone who just passed away recently that was dear to our hearts, and especially Kyle's heart. Pastor John Tweed was just taken into glory here at the time of recording this just a few weeks ago. And just knowing the influence that John had on many lives, but especially Kyle's, I thought it would be good for us today just to reflect on how important it is for this very thing, for those who are older in the faith to help those who are younger. Of course, it's a biblical concept, and we'll talk about that. But just to lead us into it, Kyle, I thought maybe you could start us off with a few reflections on John's life. And I know this is a hard time for you in many ways because you're going to miss his presence there in Winchester. But I thought we'd just ask you to share a little bit about your experience there with John.
So just for any listeners who might not be familiar, John Tweed was a pastor in the Reformed Presbyterian Church. He was born in 1929. I believe, if I remember this correctly, he was ordained in 1954, which is almost unthinkable to me, the length of this man's ministry. What a wonderful thing. And in 1996, John retired from full-time pastoring, and he settled into none other than Beulah. If you're familiar with Pilgrim's Progress, Beulah is the land just before Celestial City, which is Winchester, Kansas. And so John and his dear wife, Elta, made Winchester their home. They bought a house. They have a daughter and a son-in-law here. And John maintained a very active ministry as an interim pastor, actually, between 96 and when I arrived here in Winchester in 2013, so up to 7 years ago. So even in his old age, here is a man who lived out what the psalmist says, that those who are planted in the courts of God are ever bearing fresh fruit. And John, in a very real sense, did that. I actually think, without getting into all of this, one of the remarkable things about John's ministry is while he had a faithful pastorate, this is a man that, in the words of John Piper, did not waste his retirement. And in fact, I think it's fair to say, probably did more pastoral good as an interim pastor who kind of got dropped into congregations that were experiencing difficulties and heartbreak and disunity. And he did a lot to just bring a very pastoral, very comforting, very unifying presence. And that's just so testified to. It's been testified to in the 2.5 weeks since he died, even before then. John was just this man that was able, by his presence, by his faithful ministry, whether it was behind the pulpit, he's been notorious for household visitations. But we always laugh because his household visitations, he mastered the brief visit, which is actually what allowed him to get around to all kinds of people. He'd stay for about 10 or 15 minutes, but he did so with such pattern and rhythm and regularity that he just stayed very connected with people. Anyway, so very fruitful retirement in the ministry. And when I came here in 2013, John was one of the, he was doing the interim pastorate while my congregation was looking for me. And when I came here, he was just so glad. He said, finally, at last, I get to retire. He said to me, the day I got here, and he also told me in the last conversation we ever had, I've just so wanted a pastor. And he said, it was just so nice at the end of my life to go from being a pastor to being pastored. And as true as that is, I was his pastor until the day he died. What I've told people, and I've often told people, is that John really was kind of my personal pastor. That for my first 7 years here, John and I spent a ridiculous amount of time together. Whether it was going out to eat, we always went, for 5 years, we went to Pizza Hut every Tuesday.
There's a Pizza Hut in Winchester?
No, it's 30 minutes away. So we had the car ride, we ate a Pizza Hut, and we came home. So we met a couple other, another pastor and an elder of a Reformed Baptist church. And for 5 years, we kept up the practice of going out for pizza. And so John and I would always have, on Tuesdays, we'd always have about at least 3 hours together. Mm. He'd come on visits with me. He taught me a lot. You know, one of the things that I was telling his family as we were gathered around his deathbed is I didn't grow up with much by way of grandparent figures. And I just didn't grow up interacting a lot with elderly people. And John was this wonderful influence on me, not only to learn to really appreciate our older saints, but he tagged along with me for my first 3 years of ministry here, going into nursing homes. And I was able to just step back and watch the way that he ministered to elderly people, even in nursing homes. And it's hard to actually express what I learned just by observing. And so, yeah, there's so much more to say. John was wonderful. He was wonderful. And, you know, for me, his loss, I feel it as a pastor. I feel it as a friend. I feel his loss. I feel like my grandpa's died because I never really had a grandpa. And John is probably the person in my life that I have been closest to now that has died. And so I kind of find myself in this new experience. Like, this is very new for Kyle. But he was a wonderful man all around. So. Mm.
Well, we could actually spend a whole episode just talking about John. I appreciated the tribute you wrote where you called him an ordinary pastor and how God yet used him in extraordinary ways. And I think it wasn't like 31 different interim pastorate type positions he had at 19, 20 different congregations, something along those lines. So
31 different assignments in 19 congregations around the world.
Pretty incredible. And some of them overseas even. So we could spend a lot of time talking about John, but I don't mind if you refer back to him at all during this, Kyle, but I did want to just bring up the idea of these fathers in the Lord. I think it's clearly in the scriptures, a biblical paradigm. A lot of times we talk about Paul-Timothy type relationships or mentoring relationships, but it's more than just this formal, I'm going to have someone teach me, or I even know some ecclesiastical settings where they bring in what they call life coaches and they pay them to come and do this type of thing. But I want to talk more about the organic nature of this in the church, where people really become to us a father in the Lord. And we've heard a little bit about Kyle's experience. Scott, as you've grown up in the faith, I'm sure you've had some people in your life that God's used to father you in the Lord. And is this an experience you had? And do you think it's a biblical need and that type of thing?
I will tell you, my experience is probably different than Kyle's, not in a bad way. I didn't have one man who kind of took me under their wing. in Kokomo, as a new Christian, I was blessed with great elders. And I'm not just talking about Barry. He is a wonderful pastor, but I was blessed with really God-fearing, God-loving, church-loving mm-hmm. elders. And so what I was able to do is to see men like Bob McKissick and Greg Fisher and Tom Dinkeldine live. And it's, I suppose it's similar to Kyle's experience in this way. I learned to live as a layman, as a servant of the church, not as a pastor, not as any, you know, just a regular person in the church, and to watch how they shepherded their family, how they loved their wives, how they brought up their children, how they interacted with people in the community, and even me, having me in their homes. It just taught me so much. And Barry, I would include you in that, though you probably don't want to be considered my father, maybe an older brother, you know, or a younger uncle. But I appreciated so much the session, actively taking an interest in my life and having us over and showing. It was not a formal time of education. And that's probably not what I needed. What I needed was a real practical education in how to be a godly man. And that's what I received just by virtue of being around these men and a lot of other godly men. But those four, I would count you in that too, Barry. But those you four in particular, it was being able to watch you and observe you and emulate you. That's what I see as you know, these are, none of them probably want to be considered my father, given my age and theirs, but I consider them kind of fathers in the faith in that way.
Scott, it's not just given your age. It's just you. They don't want to be responsible for you. So.
Thank you, Kyle. You're right.
You're welcome. I'm kidding. Of course I'm kidding.
Well, we do see scripturally, we again talk about Paul and Timothy. Paul often referred to Timothy as my true child in the faith, is a term that he used fairly regularly, and told him that, you know, he might have many tutors in the faith, but only one father. And I wanted to just ask, I think you're beginning to touch on some of the aspects of this, but I wanted to develop this a little more in this conversation. As you think about in the nuclear family, a father figure and his role with his family, and we can stress the importance of that as for Christian families, but more generally speaking, this idea of a spiritual father, how does someone become a spiritual father? What would be some of the qualities that you would look for? How do these types of relationships develop in the church? What's been, again, your experience or even pastoral or elder advice that you would give to people who might be listening?
Oftentimes, I think it's very organic in its creation. When you have life coaches and people come in and try to be your mentor, sometimes it's forced and there's not that. It can work. Don't get me wrong, but I think there's this organic nature to it where it just develops over time. Sometimes it's short amount of time, sometimes it's longer amount of time. But it's what I've found in my life is that it's people taking an interest in my life and in me and who I am and having me over. Those were the kind of things that drew me in. And those are the things that I think we should try to do as we seek to replicate what's been done for us in the faith to younger people. It's invest in people's lives. And I think organically and naturally it will happen.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And of course, Barry, you've pointed out the Paul-Timothy relationship, which probably in the New Testament is the most obvious of that type of a relationship. Of course, Titus as well. Mm-hmm. I think Paul begins Titus chapter 1 to, what is it, my true spiritual child in the common faith, or something like that. And so, you know, you do see these patterns. I want to really, both of you have emphasized this aspect, so I'm just going to piggyback on it. But what I appreciate is this idea of it kind of organically coming about. You know, this is not this, hey, let's enter into this formal mentor-mentoree relationship. You know, that's not how I am with my son. That's not how you guys are with your sons, right? Like, this is a relationship that, due to just mutual affection and love, is one that happens. And I think we begin to see something of that even with Paul and Timothy's history. You know, if you go back to Acts 13 or 14, you know, there's the evidence that Timothy likely didn't have a believing father. And as Paul was preaching and ministering in the area, you know, their hearts were very bound together. And so I love that, you know, and that's one thing. So with John, that's one thing that I appreciated is John never would have assumed a posture of let me be your father and you be my son. It just kind of naturally fell out that way. Mm-hmm. Like I just, you know, but I also think with that, so I like the organic aspect, but I also think that biblically speaking, there is a sense in which this is ordered in the relationships that we have. And what I mean by that is, you know, even in writing to his spiritual son, Timothy, the Apostle Paul says in 1 Timothy 5, treat older men as fathers. That is the, you know, and then younger men as brothers. He says, treat older women as, he does say, treat them as mothers, right? Yep. Yes, older women yes. as mothers, younger women as sisters. Mm-hmm. Paul's actually giving an order for the relationships that we are to have in the church. And so while there are certain relationships like Paul and Timothy, which rise above just kind of that common order, there is this idea that in the church, this is really how we should relate to one another. If you're younger, look at older men as fathers. Look at younger men as brothers. Look at older women as mothers. Look at younger women as sisters. And that actually beautifully expresses that metaphor that we were talking about in a previous episode, that mm-hmm. we are a family. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, organic, but some of it is just the natural ordering in the way that the relationships of the church are structured. Now, I think another one of your questions is what does that look like? I think one of the best pictures that we get of that is the way that the Apostle Paul actually paints his own fatherly ministry with the Thessalonians. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, as Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are writing about their ministry, and they do so under different images and different expressions, they write in 1 Thessalonians 2:11, for you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Right there is a fatherly ministry, right? That's what a father does. And as a son, as a younger man, you receive that, you know, you, and I think too, you know, it's, how can I put this? As a younger man, to look for that and to expect it. And as God gives grace, to try to put older men in a position where they can be a father to you. Mm-hmm. You know, that I think that's an important aspect, you know, because, you know, most men aren't going to want to just impose themselves. Hey, you're younger. Now let me be a father to you. It's interesting that Paul puts the responsibility on Timothy's shoulders. You treat older men as fathers. Give them an opportunity to be a father in the faith, to encourage you, to exhort you, to admonish you when you need it, and to help you walk in a manner that's glorifying to God. So I think some of that, and again, that's what I always appreciate about John. And John, obviously, I hope it goes without saying, maybe it doesn't, you know, that's not a relationship to lord over. You know, seldom as a father, there are times when in discipline you have to tell your biological son, I'm the dad. It's time to listen. But those times are very, very seldom. And I don't know that they should be perfectly mimicked in this type of a relationship. You know, John would never assert himself in that way to me. And, you know, he always told me, I'm just so glad that you're my pastor. And he genuinely related to me as his pastor. But at the same time, just organically, this is the way it fell out. Mm-hmm. I'll stop babbling now.
No. I think all of that's very helpful that both of you have brought to here, and just again to capture some of that there is this sense where in the church there are going to be organic relationships that develop between older men and younger men, or older women and younger women, that can lead to this deepening spirituality as someone older in the faith shares what they've learned to someone younger. But it doesn't happen only just by chance, just by people coming into the church and then these relationships forming. I think there has to be intentionality to it. And what you've talked about is how the church is, according to the scriptures, to be ordered in this way. It starts really with the pastor and the elders having a vigorous shepherding ministry among the people. And as they're shepherding people and really caring for them, they'll form these types of relationships with people in the church. They'll also lead them. I can't do all the shepherding ministry that needs to take place in the church. I can't do, of course, some of the shepherding ministry that needs to take place with young women. And so to have some older woman come alongside and help someone, sometimes that can happen, again, just naturally as they develop relationships. Sometimes in shepherding, we've suggested ways that people could be aided by someone else in a congregation. So I think it's really important to really have that sense, as you mentioned, Kyle, that sense of family, that we are a family of God, and that we have to really work in the church toward being that family of God. And I love...
I think within that too, you know, when you look, for instance, at what Paul stresses in 1 Thessalonians 2 with a father, and he actually compares himself to a mother as well, right? I was gentle among you like a nursing mother.
Yes.
Which most men, I think, if they actually understood the import of that, would blush a little bit, like, oh, I'm a nursing mother. But that's the language he uses to describe this. What strikes me is that, you know, in the relationships the fatherly and motherly characteristics or qualities, you might say, that are being drawn out are not ones of authority and submission. It's the nurture, and it's the love, and it's the direction, and it's the guidance. And I do think that's important to stress in some ways too, right? The church does have proper authorities. Those are the elders, and you need to respect the authority of the elders. I think one of the wonderful things in, you know, that every older man being a father, younger men being sons, this is not a relationship of authority and submission. Oh, I've got to obey everything the older men say. No, you're called to obey and submit to the elders. But the direction or the characteristics, the qualities that are emphasized scripturally in defining that relationship is more the fatherly direction, the admonishment, the encouragement, the exhortation. And I do think that's an important thing to emphasize. And I'm not trying to be snotty in saying that. It's just, if there are older men in the church, they don't get to put their foot down and say, well, I'm the older man and everybody needs to submit to me. Mm-hmm. That's not the father-son relationship that really is spiritually being developed, in my opinion. So.
Right. And we've addressed in other episodes the heavy-handedness a lot of church authorities are using in this age. And we're not stressing that. We're really stressing the personal relationship that we're to have with people in the church, the love, the care. And when authority or discipline has to be used, it always has to be done if it's going to be done properly in a context of love. I think one of the things that is really needed, let's talk a little bit about the theology behind this, Kyle. Why is the church to be structured as a family? What's the undergirding theological reason for that? I hope that's a softball.
What are you talking about? What on earth? I mean, right, it begins with the way in which God himself relates to his people. Mm. You know, sometimes you hear about universal fatherhood of God. In one very qualified, narrow sense, I suppose that's true. The Apostle Paul talks about that in the book of Acts. But very, very specifically, God the Father is the Father of his children mm-hmm. in a redemptive context, right? We are adopted into the family. As we talked about in a previous episode, family is one of the most consistent, if not maybe even the most used metaphor to describe the church of Jesus Christ. And it begins with God the Father. Jesus Christ in the scriptures is our elder brother. And as we are knit to him by the Spirit, so we are knit to one another. And so really underlining this, these spiritual relationships is this very true reality in our identity as Christians. We are the children of God, and we are joined together by the spirit of adoption, so that you're my brother, I'm your brother. And so I think that is the theology that really undergirds a lot of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're bringing up that Trinitarian theology. I think also just reflecting on how the Father and Son's relationship are expressed in Scripture. There's an equality, but a submission as the Son serves the Father. And I just think if we can look at that and meditate on it, and then as I think about the people in the church that, as you're explaining, that I'm in a relationship with, I need to use that pattern, that paradigm, to go and treat people in the congregation in a way that would honor and reflect that Trinitarian love that we see in Scripture. So it's just really
and you know really what important. what a paradigm to use. You know, you think about the first generation of Christians, and you think about what it cost them. You know, we don't have the conclusive evidence, but as I said, from all appearances, Timothy's father was not a believer. And so Timothy's biological father likely did not fulfill the role that a father is supposed to fulfill. And here God in his grace provides Paul to be to Timothy the very thing he's lacking in life. And you can imagine, you know, in that first century as individual, you know, yes, we read about household salvations, household baptisms, including infants. We read about those things, but it's also true that some of these people lost everything in becoming Christians. They lost father and mother and brother. And Jesus says that. Jesus says, you know what? This is the cost. I come to divide families. And yet what God gives us in his grace more than makes up for that. And I think that's something that we ought to focus on in some of these things. You know, even today, that's not a first century problem. You look around at people in the church and you know, this person did not have a godly mother. Now she's got many godly mothers. This person didn't have a godly father. This young man doesn't have a father who's going to do what a father should do. But look at what they have. Mm-hmm. Look what they have with the church. And I think in some ways, that can almost be used evangelistically. You know, it's such a wonderful reality of the mm-hmm. church.
It's a promise of the Lord that if you leave your father and mother for my sake, that you'll have many fold over. He'll provide that, and that's the truth of the life in the church, is that you should experience it that way. And if you're not experiencing that way, it probably is an indication the gospel is not being lived out very faithfully in the church. Because I find where people are really living out the gospel faithfully, these kinds of relationships are developing. Well, Kyle, we're not. Yeah. And Scott, we don't have a lot of time left. But I was just wondering, let's say someone's listening and they're hungering for deeper spirituality, deeper relationships with people in the church. They really feel fatherless or motherless. What would you encourage them as a pastor to do, Kyle? Let me just shoot this question to you.
You know, I think this goes back again. You know, I've been in situations or heard of people who in that position kind of approach an older man and they're like, oh, will you be my mentor? You know, if I was an older man and a younger man, well, I'm a pastor, so I kind of have to say yes, but there'd be a part of me, oh, wait, what? I think that there's ways to introduce this. You know, like I said, it's interesting to me that Paul puts the responsibility on Timothy's shoulders. Timothy, you treat the older men and encourage them as you would a father. And if there was, like, for instance, if there's a young man who wanted this kind of a relationship, I think that's where I'd start is, you know, start, you know, get to know some of the men in your congregation, feel them out. I hope they're godly. I hope they think biblically. If they're not and they don't, find another man. But, you know, approach them and you don't have to say this, oh, will you be my mentor? But just as you get to know them, begin, you know, here's what I'm going through. Like, what would you do? Or, you know, can I, because that's what, you know, I just keep, that's what a dad does. A dad exhorts his son. He encourages him. You know, a son comes to his dad and just says, hey, dad, I XYZ, I want some advice. What do you do? And I think younger men, in being intentional about that can really begin to foster that relationship. I would say the same is true for younger women, right? Titus 2 encourages older women to train younger women. And I think, you know, this is a general observation. I'm probably going to eat my words. But I think the response, if young people would be willing to do that, I think it would change the culture of the church. Mm-hmm. And I mean that by saying, I want to put personally, maybe pragmatically, I want to put the responsibility on young people's shoulders. You know, don't just sit on your duff and expect older people to do this, and don't begrudge them, right? Like, if an older man in the church comes and lovingly admonishes you or exhorts you, don't just, I want nothing to do. That's completely contrary to the spirit of what the Apostle Paul says, mm-hmm. right? Paul's essentially saying, receive it. You got to learn to receive it. And so I guess for me, I would want to say, young people, be the ones who really initiate that environment and that culture by being open to older men and older women to be that in your life. And I think you would find that older men and women are willing to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong in that observation, but that's just what I'm thinking.
No, I think it's really important, a really important exhortation to seek it out and to go to others and put yourself in a posture of wanting to learn. And I do believe God will answer that. I just began the episode talking about my daughter. Let me end it, I guess, with it. I remember as we moved here 7 years ago, my daughter then was just this little 10-year-old girl. And the hardest thing for her was that she didn't have any friends. And I just remember every night she was scared about not being able to have friends. And every night we would just pray, Lord, provide friends to Celia. And just this last weekend, we had a graduation party, and the yard was filled with dozens and dozens of people who consider Celia her friend. And that's the blessing of the church. God is the God of the orphan and the widow. And if we cry out and ask him to fulfill our deep longings of heart, he'll gladly provide. And so I think it's really important what you've just said, Kyle, to really stress, especially to those who are younger in the Lord, you need mentors, you need people in your life that can know, that really know you, that can speak truth to you, that can walk alongside you. And so you really should be praying for that. And as Kyle has testified to here with John Tweed's life, it can really, really be a major influence on your life and your ministry. And it's something you don't outgrow. I'm a little older than Kyle, and I still have.
Yep, you are, Dad.
I still have those men like Jerry O'Neill and some others that come alongside me and give me the encouragement and strength I need for the things I face. Well, that's really all the time we have left on this episode of Three Guys Theologizing. We're so grateful you've joined us and tuned in for this episode. If you'd like to learn more about us, why don't you go over to our website at 3gt.xyz, where you can see all of our podcasts are listed there and get other information about us. We are in need of those who would support this ministry. My daughter's not a very rich contributor, so we need others that would help us with that. So if you'd be inclined to support us, you can learn how to do that there, and we'd be very appreciative of that. But all in all, we just want to say thank you for joining us on this episode of Three Guys Theologizing.